hello, you miserable bunch. Thanks for tuning in for the pain. I'm Mike. Over there is Elliot. This is the Rolling Wall podcast, here to talk about pretty devastating Derby Day defeat in every sense of the word, both in terms of losing to Northampton, which is never nice, and then the added kick of that. It probably, but not certainly, kicks us out of the playoff race. Elliot, mate, how are you? Good weekend. I mean, obviously ruined by Tigers, saved a bit by City.
Yeah, it was an interesting weekend of ups and downs. But overall, I think I came out ahead for the weekend. I think I won the weekend 2-1. So across the board.
Just like City, actually. And we in hindsight, we could have done with a Hamza Chowdhury at the back, I think Tigers could have done.
Yeah, we could have done with a lot of things on that. This is now, I've lost count of how many therapy podcasts the season's had, but I think this year, this one is now like a DEFCON 5 therapy podcast, just to try and find some cheer. But no, overall, it was a good weekend, thank you. How was yours?
Well, speaking of DEFCON 5, I was just telling you off air, my parents came down, which was very nice, and so obviously we spent the day with them on Saturdays with the kids. Beth was at work, and then Sunday had a nice day sort of down the local farm park and things like that. So it was all good. And Saturday night, they very kindly said, well, we'll order a takeaway and sit in, and you guys can go out, because we never get to go out anymore. So we actually met up with a couple of friends and went for a curry at Cinnamon Lounge, which you and I have both been to when you've come to visit in Keynsham, where we got probably the filthiest thing that they had on the menu. It was called the Dirty Box, which is basically curry and chips. But this they do proper curry, a very, very nice curry. And I had this thing called a Jalsag, which the guy said, I asked him if it was a just a cross between Jalfrezi and a sag. He goes, well, it's got some of the same ingredients, which is why we've named it that, but it is sort of tailored. It's got a bit of heat to it, so just be careful. I was like, well, yeah, I'll have that. You know, fine. Hottest curry I reckon I've had in 15 years. Like, it was absolutely delicious. It wasn't those ones that, you know, you can't taste anything apart from the heat. It was so tasty. So I kept coming back for more, but I kept setting my mouth on fire. But the best bit was he brought it out in a sort of iron bowl, you know, sizzling, and a bit of extra theatre. He gave it a bit of a douse with some whiskey and then sort of flambéed it, you know, set it on fire for the restaurant. The downside of that was there were so many chilies in it. The smoke basically had the entire restaurant coughing and spluttering and like people's eyes watering. There was a young family sat across, like one of the kids was on the verge of tears. I thought it was the fucking funniest thing ever. It was a perfect way to kind of get over an East Midlands Derby defeat. Absolutely delicious. I will ask them to tone the heat down on it next time, because I'm a bit of a wimp. But as an example, my mate ordered a madras, thinking that's quite safe. But the madras at one curry house will be different from any other. It's the most variable. It's the most variable heat level, isn't it? So you can go to one place and it's like a masala. You're like, well, this is easy, and you know it's cut three chilies next to it on the menu. You go to another place and you're like, well, I'm going to regret this tomorrow. And I could tell you, for you know anyone who's interested, don't know why you would be. I did regret it tomorrow, and it was just as spicy on the way out as it was in the way in.
My mate also has exactly the same theory about madrasis: of it is the most risky curry on the menu, because there is no, like, a Balti is a Balti no matter which way you go. A Boona is a Boona. A madras is not consistent whatsoever. It's like Leicester Tigers this season. One minute it's like hot and spicy, and then the other week it's a bit tepid and a bit weak as piss. So that's what we're saying. As an analogy for the year, Leicester Tigers are a madras.
Oh, wow. I like that. We haven't had too many sort of Nando's hot sauce ratings this year. It's sort of like Tigers have kept stuff under wraps pretty well, but maybe we can start to do, you know, curry rated reviews of performances. So that was an experience. Then it was a very nice experience as well. This podcast, though, back onto the rugby, obviously we'll be looking over Northampton. Then we're going to be looking forward. I say that, perhaps ironically, to a home game against Bristol, a Bristol side that suddenly, out of the blue, are on absolute fire, a vindaloo, if you like, absolutely ripped apart. Beg your pardon, Newcastle at the weekend. They have flown out of the blocks after the mid-season break, and it looks like it's going to be an absolutely cracking fixture, and one which is a really, really exciting challenge. We're also going to hopefully speak to a player, but at the time of recording this on Monday evening, we don't know who it's going to be or if it's certainly going to happen. So hopefully that'll be a nice surprise for you later in the podcast. And if it doesn't happen, just forget we talked about it. I think that's about fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not our fault.
Yeah, was it deflect and blame? That's exactly it. The only other thing I've got to do very quickly is shout out about fantasy rugby, mainly because I had an absolutely fucking great week. Because I captained Jansen van Rensburg, who had an absolutely stormy day, as did Bristol in general, to be fair. I think I took 277 points when the average was 180. Thank you very much. Doesn't do a lot for my position. Only moved me up 6 points to 27th. Let's just have a look about that. Who's at the top of the leaderboard. It's still Will F. Mayer with 2,869 points. He's got a big lead. It's about 70 points over Duncan, who's got 2,791 points, and Matt Gilbert's 2,787. So I still say it's all to play for. It's very, very catchable, but I think we need Will to have a couple of stinkers. And of course, he is playing for a magnum of wine kindly provided by Charnwood Bintless. Thank you very much, guys. As always, thank you very much for everyone who's got in touch over the last week or so. We always love to hear from you. If you want to get in touch yourself, you can do. Our email address is therollingmore@outlook.com. Our Twitter handle is @rollingmorepod. And we've got a Facebook group on this of the same name. But remember to leave a review, if you so please. Before we crack on, a quick thank you to our sponsors, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters, who are helping us put this all together. St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are a small team of coffee professionals, proudly born and bred in Leicester. Family owned and operated, they've been dedicated to perfecting the art of coffee roasting for the past 10 years, solely focused on sourcing, roasting, and supplying some of the world's best specialty coffee to their customers across Leicestershire and the UK. They're passionate Tigers fans, and St. Martin's have long-standing connections with the club and are proud to help caffeinate the players and staff in their efforts on and off the pitch. In an effort to help the fans wake up on match days, St. Martin's Coffee Roasters are offering 20% off all coffee when listeners use the code ROLLINGBALL, that's all one word, on their website. So visit stmartinscoffee.co.uk to stock up on locally roasted specialty coffee and use the code ROLLINGBALL, all one word, to save 20% off your next purchase. The news section is brought to you by Parish Brewery, who are offering you and your pub free beer. Now that I've got your attention, Parish Brewery award-winning ales are brewed in a 400-year-old converted stable block in Borough-on-the-Hill in rural East Leicestershire. It's here that they follow the traditional ways of brewing, using only the finest ingredients to brew their cask-conditioned beer. In addition to the many beer festival awards, the brewery is the proud recipient of a Guinness Book of World Records award in 1994 for having brewed the world's strongest beer at that time, Baz's Superbrew, and its offspring, Baz's Bonce Blower, is still going strong. Very strong, but absolutely delicious. So back to the free beer, Parish are offering you the chance to win 4 perfect pints of their ale to enjoy at your local. All you have to do is tell them on Instagram or Facebook what your favourite Parish flavour is. If you're yet to try one, you can check out which one will tickle your taste buds by visiting parishbrewery.co.uk. Not only will you win, but so will your pub, as they'll be gifted a free pin, and that's 36 delicious pints to you and I. So get on your socials, tell Parish your favourite flavour, and get a chance for some free beer. It's that easy. Participating pubs only. All entrants must be 18 or over. Full terms and conditions apply.
Time for a very quick bit of beep, 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 beep news. And I think we need to start with the Leicester Tigers women. As always, you can get a proper review on their podcast, fantastic LTW Fancast, hosted by Jess Bunyan and Jacob Bassford. I don't really want to talk about this much more than I want to talk about the Northampton game, to be honest, mate. Ealing 54, Leicester Tigers 5. I don't think that it's one you can take a huge amount from, really.
Both us and Jess and Jacob will be under the pub to find some positives this week, because it wasn't a good weekend for Leicester Tigers sides. All of us have been trying to find, you know, there have been numerous positives for the girls, even in defeat. This weekend probably is one where you don't have many, and you just have to brush over it and move on pretty quickly. And I suspect they will be doing that on their podcast.
Yeah, really the report. I think Ealing sort of like blazed into a lead, then Tigers came back into it sort of second quarter and made a real scrap of it. But then second half just kind of like got washed away a bit. And that's this point. You know, the one thing with Tiger sides is you don't really want us to go away. And that's probably something the men's and the women's side both had in common. Obviously, there were different reasons, though. The women had a yellow card, and obviously we'll come to our discipline issues as well, because I think they were pretty major. But oh well, on to the next game.
that's the good thing with this season. It's a free hit, really. They can just strike through it, move on to the next one. Speaking of moving on, let's talk about the only bit of transfer news that is really doing the rounds at the moment. Is annoyingly another Exeter one, and I can't see us wanting to let a centre go, particularly in what we discussed last week, how we're looking quite short. And actually, I thought DK had a fine game against Northampton. He was certainly one who emerged with credit, in my opinion. But Munster are still sniffing around. Fizzler apparently saying that there's advanced talks, but it's all very vague still. And of course, there's no information as to whether or not an approach has even been made to Tigers to buy him out of his contract.
Yeah, he caveated it this weekend by saying, some sources believe that advanced talks are happening, which is a very vague way of saying he's not really sure. It does feel like he's got someone saying it is, someone saying he's not. So he's having to sort of hedge his bets a little bit. And so maybe they're talking to him, maybe they're not. It's hard to really say that with any firm certainty if anything is happening. So hard to really get too nervous about it, to be honest, because you can't really say it's like a hot rumour coming through. Whereas I think if it was definitely happening, I think Fizzler would be all over it. I think he's reaching a bit on this one.
Yeah, like I said, can't see us letting someone go, particularly this late. I think it's quite hard to go and pick someone up. Obviously, we sort of tried to stoke some rumours last week about Joe Marchant, or when somebody asked who it was on one of the Facebook pages, I said no chance, and that's what it rhymes with. But I mean, say, I think we do need another centre, and obviously we won't want to let Kelly go because that just sort of like makes the shopping list longer. I think it's probably more realistic that hopefully we'll do some due diligence, perhaps in the Championship, see if there's anyone who's English qualified and looks a handful there. As we know, it's a really, really good area to go shopping in, and a lot of the players come up quite underrated. But are very thirsty to prove themselves. So I would have no problem with us having a look at the Championship for the right kind of player. But yeah, like you, I can't see it happening this season unless there was a big, big, big dollar sign attached to it.
Even then, I think if you're McKellar, I think you'd probably lay down a law and sort of go, if you let him go, I'd walk. I think it's...
You've given me a season without an attack coach. I'm not having a season without any centres. No point in getting an attack coach in, but I don't have a fucking midfield.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of thing where I just don't see DK desperately wanting to leave to go to Munster. I think he's got an equally good a shot of getting in the England side, staying here, than he is going to Munster and getting in the Irish side. It doesn't feel like a hot ticket into the Irish team.
No, I mean, he's got, obviously, I know Aki's not getting any younger, but you've got Aki, Henshaw, and Osborne, obviously, is very highly rated at Leinster as well, who would all be ahead of him in the pecking order. And that's not even looking sort of into the other provinces' stocks as well. So, I can't really see it at the moment. Okay, get ready for a stat attack, because Elliot has been swatting up to use stats to debunk some of the moans that have been going on. But I think we can afford a bit of a moan, because it's a loss to Northampton at the end of the day. And obviously, whilst we weren't necessarily at complete full strength, I think we had a much more of a sort of a settled side out than Northampton did, who rotated, put down a few big guns. But got to give credit to Northampton. They deserve to win. 40-17, ran away with it at the end. And it's... simply at the moment, I think we've just got to, take our medicine that sadly they are the better side. They're playing great rugby. They've got great depth in good positions, particularly the back three. And I'd say when I saw that team, I saw people getting excited that it was rotated and, various things. I then had a look at the Northampton bench and I said, they're not fully rested, are they? Because you've got, all of a sudden, you're going to be in the last quarter of the game and Finn Smith and Tommy Freeman are going to sort of, strut off the bench and rip us apart. And, oh no, look what happened.
Yeah, it sort of played out that sort of way, didn't it? It's not often in games that a single moment changes the game or defines the game. But for me, Saturday, it was one of those games where that did happen. Because for numerous reasons, I couldn't watch the game live on Saturday. So I had to watch the game back on Sunday morning. But I debated whether to look at the result on India, and I caved. And at 5 o'clock, I looked at the result and saw 40-17. I went, oh my God, what's happened there? So I created an idea of what had happened in my mind, and I watched the game back, and it almost went the complete opposite of what I thought had happened. In terms of, after 60 minutes, we're in the game. You know, after at 60 minutes, it's 18-17, and for a lot of that hour, we've done all the sort of things that we've been speaking about last week with Charlie, where we'd stopped Northampton playing the game on their terms. We were playing a lot of the game on our terms. You know, we were disrupting their ruck. We're getting in at the breakdown. Our defence was was holding up pretty steady. And it's a one-point game. You know, you're going into the last quarter and it's a one-point game. You're there or thereabouts. And that's where you get into that last quarter when it's level pegging, or it's a one-point game like that. It comes down to going into your processes, finding your territory, your execution, and you see the game home at that point. But for an hour, I thought we were doing pretty well. Then the red card happens. And for me, it's a needless red in terms of, I love Kata and he's perfectly entitled to put a big shot in.
Yeah.
But to run up 20 yards and to shoulder barge someone in the head is just, you know,
it was a horribly clumsy tackle, wasn't it? I've got no complaints about that red at all. I mean, like, I love Kata. He's been a sensation for us. He's probably been our signing of the season. This was the first sort of, like, I think, real sort of black mark against his name. And he'll know it as well, that he just got that.
And he did.
He knew it straight away. He got it really wrong. And it was just clumsy. He was almost so eager to fly up, he just forgot his technique. And that's the lesson that I think has got to be learned. I mean, he'll probably be out for two or three games. He'll get 3 weeks and then go to the two-week tactical. I don't think he's got much history of bad shots. But, I mean, he's not a tall guy either. He doesn't have to work too hard to get low. So it was a needless one to give away. It's not like one of Chesham's sort of yellow cards that he gets, where you're like, well, how the fuck can a guy who's 6'9" or whatever he is kind of get that low? But, yeah, that was frustrating. I'm going to disagree slightly, because I do think that kind of, I suppose for me, hammered the nail in the coffin. I thought we were starting to look quite ropey at that point already. We hadn't started the second half well at all. But I think it still comes down to the same thing, which is discipline. By that point, we'd already played half the game, I think, or 20 minutes of the game, beg your pardon, with 14 men. And the way we were playing meant that losing a man was absolutely devastating to us. I think when we were sort of like 15 aside, we were doing really well and we were causing lots of damage. And the issue that I had with this was that, I say not an issue, because I thought the game plan in defence certainly was bob on in terms of being able to disrupt their ruck. We were counter-rucking really aggressively. That involves putting people into the ruck. And that's a choice you have to make, to leave yourself slightly short, but not so short in the back line that you're going to get overwhelmed by numbers if Northampton get it out, which, you know, 50-50 they would do, even if it was scrappy ball. All of a sudden, if you're down a man, you've either got to sacrifice disrupting the ruck, which gives Northampton quick ball, you know, when that allows them to dictate the game and they're devastating, or you still try and carry on disrupting the ruck and you leave yourself really short of numbers and struggling. And I thought we did really well with our press. We were very reserved with our press and allowed Northampton to kind of like run their patterns sort of well in front of the defensive line. But effectively, if you're short on numbers because you've tried to put people into the breakdown and you're a man down, then you're going to struggle. And also, I noticed there were a lot of comments about us, you know, looking leggy. And, you know, I don't disagree. But you've got to remember that the way that we were playing meant all of a sudden we're trying to scramble against one of the best attacking teams, if not the best attacking team of the league, with 14 men. It's the strain that puts on the side, not just talking about Kata's red, I'm talking about Shilcott's yellow, I'm talking about Visa's yellow as well, although he was just at the end of a long line of indiscipline. So that one, you know, he was unlucky to be that person. It was always going to leave us short of breath and short of legs.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, when you look at the game, whilst we conceded 40 points, when it was 15 aside, we only conceded 6. No, all the points Northampton scored were when we were down to 14 men. And you can't play against a team like Northampton with 14 men for 40 minutes. You just can't. You know, it's a tough task when it's 15 versus 15 for 80. But if you then turn it into 15 versus 14 for 40 minutes, you're going to get what happened, especially when we're employing a game plan, which involves a lot of hard work in terms of disrupting the rucks and getting out to cover in defence and scramble. When you go down to 14 men, we talked about it last week, what Northampton want is space. So even though it's 15 versus 15, all they're looking for is space to attack in. And if you give up a one-man advantage, you're giving them more space, which means you've got to work even harder to cover. And if you're having to work even harder to cover for 40 minutes, you're going to tire yourself out. And what that's effectively what happened, is that the players aren't unfit. But what they did is basically hampered themselves for such a big amount of time.
It was half the game in total.
Yeah, this is it. And so you hamper yourself so badly that you are going to be exhausted. So I don't sit here and go, oh, the players are unfit, but S&C coach needs sacking. No, the players have got to get learning. You've got to have 15 players on the pitch for 80 minutes. You've got to give yourself the best chance of winning the game. And that involves having a full complement. Because you can't play against a team like Northampton like we did, like a man down for so long. And this is where actually that final quarter, there's no excuses for the collapse. And it's again, the same old story yet again of, you know, a bit of pressure comes on, we buckle. A severe lack of leadership again is really question. Like, it really worries me that yet again, pressure comes on. And there's some senior boys on that field, you know, yes, it is a young team out there, but there's a lot of experienced players that have played 50, 60, 70 games for Tigers. You know, you played a lot of rugby. We've got a World Cup, double World Cup winner on the field. Where's the leadership? That what hurts me more than anything else is the buckling under pressure, because fundamentally, once the red card for me is a massive game changer, because at this point I thought there's no guarantees that we win the game at 18-17, but there's no guarantees we lose the game at 18-17 and it's 15 aside. We've got Visa over for a try. We've managed to get ourselves back in the game. You know, last 20 minutes, there is an opportunity to go and close the game out. I'm not saying we're going to do it, but there's an opportunity there.
The way we were playing as well also had, you know, meant that we were always going to be in the game, which would basically be, look, effectively, if we can get our maul into the game, which was pretty dominant at various points, we'd be able to cause damage. And, you know, the Emperor scored off a rolling ball. Then you've got that fantastic move off the back of the line out with like an unbelievable take by Chez and drop off to Visa, who just like slams through. But, you know, those were moments to go and say, look, we're in the game. And I think for me, again, when I looked at the bench, the big thing was being able to kind of like have a good lead at about half time. And we did have a lead, but it wasn't as good as it could or certainly should have been. We were both excited to see Shilcox start at fullback, thought it was the right move. I think Chile's been fantastic. He's been another sort of candidate for signing of the season. This wasn't his finest game by a long stretch. And you know, that butchered 2-on-1. And it's not just one where Stewart might have scored. Stewart was walking in, if he gives that, to a point where my dad and I were already up out the sofa because we kind of assumed that he was going to give it. I've got no idea why he didn't. Perhaps he didn't see or know Stewart was outside him. I don't know. But you could tell as soon as he saw it on the screen, he realised he'd fucked up. But that was disappointing. Obviously then sort of hampered then by the yellow card as well. It wasn't his best day, but you know, we put that one away and all of a sudden it looks like quite a healthy scoreline going into half time. And these are the things. So I was actually encouraged in the first half. By the way, we did manage to get on the outside a couple of times. Some of the attacking play was a lot better. We actually sort of managed to run some phases. We got down the right a couple of times. Hassel Collins has come in for some heat, I've noticed as well. I mean, I think people are talking about his kick chase and he picks up, is he really going for it? I don't know if it's a lack of confidence or something from him at the moment, because sometimes he gets it. There was that point in the first half where he got the ball in no space, beat three players and made sort of 10, 15 metres. And you thought, well, there you go. That's what you're there for, mate. But I mean, he can't have a huge amount of confidence when he's not getting the ball in, you know, kind of the space that he can be so effective in.
Yeah, I think some of the noise is overstated, and I think some of the noise it can be justified. I think it's just I think he is a confidence player. I think he's someone that needs an arm around his shoulder. And I think if we had, not to say it's an attack coach makes the world go round a lot easier, but I think if you had an attack coach who would put an arm around him and say, don't worry, Ollie, we're going to design a game plan that's going to help you out, I think he'd feel a little bit reassured about himself. And I just don't think I just think he's low on confidence at the moment. We're in a team that's finding its feet in attack, struggling. The good thing one thing I will say about the attack is that we have got different complaints about the attack now, that 6 months ago we were complaining that we weren't creating any chances. At least we are now creating chances. I mean, we're not taking them, but we've moved on to such an extent that against Leinster and now Saints, we are now creating chances. Now, whilst it's not ideal that we're butchering chances, I'd rather be in a situation where we're creating something and not taking them rather than not having any chances to talk about anyway. So we have advanced our game a little bit on the attack on that front, in that you know, like you say, Shieldcock just passed the ball. It's just a simple 5 yards, 5 meters ship on Stewart in the corner. So it is tough for Ollie at the moment. And I do think he got a little bit unfairly picked on by Austin. And I think everyone else has sort of rushed off the back of that. And it's now stuck, you know, dartboard up in his face in the middle of it. And I think that's a little bit unfair because I don't necessarily think it's a lot of it is justified. I think Austin was actually unfair about the ruck where he supposedly sort of dived out on. I thought it was a 50-50 call for him to sort of go in, because if you go in and the game plan is don't leave yourself too exposed out wide, you know, if you go in and leave yourself exposed out wide, does Austin then go, well, he's dived into the ruck and he's left his
I agree. He can't win in that at all. So I think it was said we'll finish getting the negatives out of the way then. So we talked about discipline. We've talked a bit about sort of the apparent legginess, and obviously we've talked about the poor sort of finishing of attacking opportunities. One thing I'm going to raise a question on then as well is the use of subs. I was surprised, I'll put it that way, that we took the Emperor off after, I think, 50 minutes or 55 minutes. Coley came off as well. It was a difficult one because with Coley, obviously, he's there to get scrum dominance. And I thought, you know, he's had Alex Waller on toast for most of his career. And I think actually Alex Waller won the penalty count 1-0 because he was just simply going down before we could possibly get a shove on him, which, you know, I suppose someone like Coley would probably say, well, fair play, that's clever scrummaging in a certain way. But it was obviously, we didn't get the advantage there, but he was still doing a lot of damage in the rucks. He contributed to a couple of turnovers. He made a try-saving tackle on Mitchell that got him held up. And I've got to say that I was surprised to see both of those guys taken off so early, and particularly when you talk about the lack of leadership, I think taking off Julian is odd. Now, that's obviously nothing against Charlie Clare. We love Charlie Clare. He's fantastic, but the Emperor is the Emperor. You know, I was just surprised to see him go off. Maybe he's got a niggle that we don't know about.
That was the point I was about to make, is that the only way or reason that you would do that so early would be for a niggle. And to be fair, the physio had come on after 5 minutes previous to him coming off, and he was having a conversation with Julian because Julian was on the floor and they did have a conversation. Now, I don't know if it was, look, give me 5 minutes to see if I can, you know, get this off, you know, stretch, run it off and come through it. Because if it wasn't an injury and it's McKellar making the pull, then I think it's a very bad decision to make. I think in a game like the Derby, as much as I love Charlie Clare, I think you want Coley certainly on for at least an hour. And I think Julian, really, you want 65 to 70 minutes from him.
We've seen him do, you know, pull 80 regularly, which I suppose makes
him. I'm not a fan of per se, but I do think you want him to go into the, I think you want him in the final quarter, a decent chunk of the final quarter. I think you want the Emperor on the field, just in terms of, especially as the game was going that certain way of, look, it's a bit scrappy. It's a point, you know.
He'd had a good game as well, you know, like some of his work at the breakdown was fantastic. Got a couple of turnovers, which is good to see. He's such a machine. It's, so I was surprised. So maybe it wasn't it. Right, I'm going to try and, as always, we try and balance stuff out between negatives and positives. I'm going to mention two words as a positive straight off the bat. Finn Kander.
Dark attack.
He's got to be Jaws, surely. You can't be called Finn. And not be called Jaws. But like, either way, he was first start at six, and we've sort of said, you know, could he be the long-term successor to Hanro? Thought he had a good game. I'm not saying he was a standout player on the pitch or anything, but I think the main thing for me was that he did not look out of place. And some of the shots he put in were big.
I'm in exactly the same boat as you in terms of, as a marker to put down, that was a real good one. I think that shows that he is competent at this level. I think he belongs at this level. And I think as a sort of an opening sort of shot to build upon, that's a really good one. I know he came off the bench against Newcastle, instrumental in winning the game, not just on the turnover, but in the defensive effort across the board. Again, it's another real good progression stone in his career. Essentially, came off the bench against Quins, looks all right. Came off the bench against Leinster, looks all right. Came off the bench against Newcastle, did all right. You know, starts as Derby, you know, so
against the easiest game to get. No, against the best team in the league as well.
Against a back row that is very, very good. I mean, I know Courtney Laws wasn't playing, but you still look at the back row for Saints. It's like, you know, it's a decent back row. There's no mugs there. So I think he acquitted himself really well. And I think for a lad that young age, I think it shows we've got a real, I know we said this before, but it shows we've got a good one there. And he's got one of those where you're putting down markers at this age, this early on in your career, shows you that, you know, as we saw with DK, Martin, and all the rest of them, he's following well in their footsteps in terms of his progression.
Yeah, completely. I think that was a really, really promising debut. And again, like, I think now it also means that when he gets selected, you're not going to get eyebrows raised at all, because I think that he's shown he can mix it. Like I say, the timing of his tackles, you know, he got some real dominance in there. And for a guy that young who, I hope you won't mind me saying, he's still got some filling out to do when you compare it to, you know, perhaps some of the other sort of like slightly older blindside flankers, you know, that is really, really exciting. I did think a few guys had good games. I mean, we saw Visa have moments, thought Chez had a really good, I mean, Chez looks like an international playing, you know, at a level beneath him. I mean, the carry that got Miller Mills sent off was just, you knew he was going through someone straight away then. The carrying a game that he's worked on is really, really impressive. That line out take I mentioned before was superb, and he got a couple of steals in as well. So I think that was all really promising. I thought DK had a really good game. I think he was really, really solid in defence. I think that he was really sort of tightening and really shut down a lot of the Northampton attack in that very difficult 13 channel. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I know a lot of people wanting him to, you know, step up and have a big game. I'm not saying it was a dominant performance, but I think it was much more like the DK that we know and love.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of those where, again, it's sort of for an hour, you sort of come, you look at it and just go, everyone's pretty solid. You know, for the first hour, there's no real sort of bad performances in there. It's everyone sort of fulfilling the task really well. It made for a really interesting first hour, because it's nip and tuck. We take the lead, they come back into it, we come back to make it a point behind. And everyone's sort of doing their jobs in different ways. And it's just, it's really frustrating that the last quarter panned out like it did, because actually you end up just going, well, the last quarter, everyone went from being solid to being 2 out of 10, and it just sort of fell apart so quickly.
Yeah, I'm sort of not counting the last quarter, because I turned it off for my old man and then fast forwarded through most of it and just was like, well, this all looks a bit shit. So I'm not really counting that at that point. But I say
everyone did put in a 2 out of 10 performance. I mean, as I say, the collapse of 12 minutes where Northampton just went, oh, look, there's loads of space, let's run into it, and we didn't put them down. I mean, pretty simple stuff. If Saints are running around, you've got to put them on their ass. You've got to put them on the floor like we were doing for the first down. And this is where it's tough, because you're down to 14 men, but you just can't afford to collapse like that. But yeah, everyone had a sort of good game for an hour, or an okay-ish solid game for an hour, and then it all sort of crumbled.
Another big turning point. It's probably my only moan about, not necessarily Christoph Ridley, and I saw some people like complaining about the reffing. I don't have any major gripes with Christoph Ridley. I think he's an improving ref. My thing with Ridley was he always seems to be really good for about 40 minutes, you know, really good at communicating. Then he tends to go quiet and the game can descend into chaos. But he seems to be getting better at that. And I don't have any gripes with his calls. The only thing I wish they did look at, maybe they did look at it in the background, was the shot by Augustus on Rafael that led to Rafael going off. My old man next to me, when we were watching it, as soon as Rafael carried in, he went, oh, fuck, that was high. And I rewound it and I looked, and you can't see from the angle, but you can see his shoulder is in the vicinity of the head. And then you know that Rafael goes off for an HIA and obviously doesn't pass it, which is worrying. So you do wonder whether or not there was anything there. I'm just surprised. Yeah, Healy was really keen to look at the hit from Kata on Dingwall. Fair enough. But I just wonder where that was when, you know, saying, oh, I wonder what injured Rafael, because I can only see that it was that hit from Augustus.
I have zero confidence in the TMO's ability to pick up headshots, because there's too many times where things aren't looked at, missed. We saw it in the World Cup. We saw it in the Quinns Saris game, where we caught the audio, which is sort of revealed quite a lot. To me, I just, on these sort of things, I think it's a pure Russian roulette. It's a lottery of what gets looked at and what doesn't. I think there may well have been. They always say, yeah, we check in the background on everything. No, you don't. Clearly, we don't, because there's too many examples of stuff getting mixed.
Yeah.
So I don't buy. I don't know. This is the thing. We just don't know. And I have zero confidence that it was looked at. So it might well have been innocent. It might well have been guilty. Who knows?
Doesn't make a difference because it didn't get picked up. But like you say, they haven't covered themselves in glory lately. Like I say, I don't know if it would have made a difference to the result anyway, given how well Northampton are playing at the moment. Shall we go into some stats then, mate? I know you've been prepping for some 3-year reviews. I think you want to talk about, you know, there's a lot of chat about how we've regressed this season. And I think you've got some stats to potentially say that it's not quite as bad as perhaps we feel at the moment.
Yeah, this isn't me doing Dan McKellar's PR by any stretch of the imagination. And this isn't me saying, oh, Dan McKellar's doing a great job. No, let's make this perfectly clear. But I had half an hour. I've been in North London all this today on the road. So I had half an hour just to my own interest, if you feel. I wanted to have a look at certain things just to see how we were tracking. So these are all stats took from the Premiership Rugby website. So this is all off the official Premiership website. And I had half an hour to do it. So this looks at a few things just to have a look at a way of comparison. So last season, 22-23 season, after 20 games at the end of the season, we had a win percentage of 51%. Currently, as we stand, as here now, we have a win percentage of 53.33%. So we actually have a better win record as we stand now compared to the end of last season. After 15 games last year, we'd won 7. After 15 games this season, we've won 8. So we've actually won more games at this part of the season compared to before. And this is in a World Cup year with a new coach who hasn't had a full pre-season with his full squad. No, he only had a week when he all came back and he had to work with him. So that's just a bit of context there. After 18 games last season, we'd won 10. So I think if you want to be as well of comparison, we really want to be on 10, 11 wins for the end of this season to say we've not regressed. That's a target for us to have a look at. And the 11 games this season since the World Cup boys came back, so from the Quins at home game onwards, we've played 11 in the league. We've got a win percentage of 63%. And if you extrapolate that over 18 games, that's 12 wins, which is top 4 form. On the way this is going, it actually might get you to second or third. So it shows that since the World Cup players have come back, we are tracking better pretty well. And actually, as I say, we're tracking pretty well for the season overall compared to last year. Lineup success this season is at 89%. And that's the fourth best in the league. And we always say 90% is sort of where you're looking for. 85% is sort of the base minimum. If you get over 90, that shows you're in a sort of very good, excellent category. Scrum success is 91%. And that's the joint third best. In defence, we have the best defence in the league. And that's against points conceded and tries conceded. So we're pretty miserly there. Discipline. I know discipline's a hot topic at the moment. And there's quite a few comments saying that we are a really ill-disciplined team and it's a major issue for us. Over the course of the season, we've conceded 137 penalties, which is at 9.13 per game, which is always in the sort of optimum level of penalties to concede. And it's actually the third best or the third lowest amount of penalties conceded. So we've actually got a pretty good discipline record across the board. One of the other things that sort of gets thrown up quite a lot of the time is that we kick too much. Just as way of comparison, Tigers have kicked from our 15 games 497 times from our 15 games. Northampton Saints, who apparently never kicked the ball under the masters of running rugby, and they are a very good attacking team, have actually kicked the ball 469 times. So per game, we actually kick the ball only twice more than what Northampton do. They actually kick it just as often as us. And at equivalent points, so we kick it 497 times for 14,700 metres. They kick it 469 times so far this season for 14,159. So we're as near as damn it, pretty similar record. Pretty identical. The rolling maul, it sort of uses, it's bemoaned it's our only attacking weapon. And to be fair, it is, but we should be grateful for the fact we are, because last season we were the ninth worst in the league at scoring from lineouts and from rolling mauls. Now, I don't have the statistics in front of me of where we track in terms of a comparison across the league this time, but I would say that we're probably in the top two or three, if not the first position. We are very, very good and very clinical on that. Just on the kick-in, check out a couple of threads on Twitter from Sam Lana and Carrick Blake, who've shown that actually the successes, I'll put my teeth back in, that we've had this year are actually coming from our kicking game. It actually puts us in a position to actually play our game. And the good things that we've done this year will come off the back of the kicking game. Last couple of points is the average points for per game for us is 23.6, and the average points against is 22.26. And I think this actually, to finish off, is a stat that really shows you why, for me, some people think we're well off the standard. And I think people are saying we've regressed badly. We're well off the good teams, and there's a huge amount of work to be done. Like, I disagree with that. I do think that there's very fine margins between success and failure. And this is the reason why I think we're eighth and not third. And I'm going to point out is that for me, in this 10-team league and the concentration of talent that's across the board and the squad depth now, all pretty equal. There's not a lot of difference between the teams now in their squads and their starting line. And you see it you look at the league table, there's not a lot of difference between most of the teams in the league. It's only real fractions, and you see how congested the teams are and how identical the records are. There really isn't a lot of differences. But from watching not just Tigers, but a lot of rugby across the league this year, it's becoming apparent that in games, there will come a point where there are big moments, and the best teams or the better teams take those moments when they're presenting, they'll go on to win the game.
Yeah.
Or they're so ruthless that they don't give away those opportunities to their opponents. What we're not very good at is taking those moments. And I'll give you three games, which I think sort of back this up. Quins at home, Gloucester at home, and Saints away at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Quins at home, it's not a dominant performance, but it's an equal side. You know, there's not a lot of difference between us and Quins. They're a good side, we're a good side. So you'd like to be more dominant, but this is the way it goes. It's a nip and tuck game. We're not at our best, but with 12 minutes to go, we're winning. You know, we're 4 or 5 points up. We have the ball in our half, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but we either kicked the ball out on the full from a box kick, or we gave a daft penalty away with 11, 12 minutes to go. And what we did is we conceded the territory. You know, you've done the hard work. You've got yourself 5 points in front. You finish the game off. You get your at home, 5 points in front. You play the game in their half and you see the game out. You nick a couple more points and you see yourself through. What you don't do is what we did, where we give the ball away and we surrender that territory. We surrendered that control and we handed the initiative to Quins, and they were a good side. They took the opportunity. They scored. They win the game. Gloucester at home, exactly the same thing. We get presented for an opportunity. We're not at our best, but we get ourselves back in front. We butcher an opportunity under the post where we could have killed Gloucester off. We didn't take it. But then 10 minutes later, we get ourselves back in front again with 5 points, 4 or 5 points in front with 7 minutes to go this time. We're in front again. You're in front. You've got yourself in the lead. You see the game home. You take the win and you walk off into the sunset. What did we do? We didn't do that. We didn't tackle properly. We missed two or three gettable tackles. Varney runs through, takes his opportunity, scores under the post, kills the game. You know, the game was there for us. We just didn't take the opportunity when it was presented to us. We weren't ruthless enough and we lose the game, and it's a game we should have won. Saints game. We just spoke about it. 60 minutes, you're 18-17. Does it mean that we're definitely going to win the game? But we're in it. You know, there's an opportunity there to go and win the game. If you go and take control of it, seize the game and dominate it for that last 20 minutes, you can get yourself over the line. And this is where the difference between success and failure at the moment for me is so minimal, because statistically we're tracking okay. You know, the statistics there. I mean, I haven't done the ones for Europe because, again, I only had half an hour. So if you think I manipulated statistics, I apologize. I haven't. I only had half an hour. So I had to rush through and try and get as much as I can done. But statistics indicate that we're not doing that badly. You know, you look at the moments in games, there's three games I've just identified there. Arguably, we should have won at least one of them, probably two. Three's maybe a stretch, but they're three winnable games. And if you win two of those games, you put those points onto the table and the swing off the teams we've lost to, and you put it back in. You think, well, we're sitting third or fourth and we're feeling great about ourselves, and we're in the playoffs and we're feeling confident about making it, and maybe even nicking second if we're lucky. Instead, we sit here eighth and we're all miserable. So the point is, I'm not saying that we're doing great, but I look at this and think, I just think we just need to give everyone just needs to calm down a little bit, and just, it's frustrating and I get it. And I don't have infinite patience with McKellar. McKellar doesn't have free reign to keep losing. I'm a realist to know that this is a results game. This is a results industry. I'm a fan. You know, I want Tigers to win. I hate losing. It makes my life miserable. Tigers lose, it ruins my weekend. So I don't have infinite patience with Dan, and he has got to deliver at some point. And if we don't win any games between now and the rest of the season, it's going to be pretty nerve-wracking for him, because if 8 wins from 18 games is pretty, you know, it's not great. You know, it's hard to defend him at that point. It's hard to provide context. But at the moment, and as we sit here now, I think we're just slightly off. It really is fine margins between where we are now, miserable, and maybe being third or fourth. It really isn't that far off for me.
I love you. See, that's why you're on this podcast. Just you've taken the time to do a deep dive in stats. I think it's very insightful. I think it just goes to show things are never as bad as you think they are or as good as you think they are. And you know, I think a lot of the time you do have to take results away and just have a look at sort of the performance. And I think you're bang on for most of that. And you know, I've seen people like sort of like calling for, you know, sackings and stuff like that, which I think is entirely premature. And I just go and look over the road at Bath under Van Gran, who have had a really good season, really positive, doing really good things and looking very, very dangerous. Yes, they've also got a shitload of money from a rich benefactor, which helps. But at the same time, they were not up to a lot at all last year in Van Gran's first season in charge. And there were moans about getting him away, basically that he was a bit of a charlatan, that he was just fluking his way through. He hadn't done a lot of Munster either. And, you know, basically people were sort of questioning whether he was any good. And look, he had a season to get his feet under the table, and now he's managing to reap the rewards of it. And you would hope that there are mitigating circumstances, the attack coach situation, the fact that we were without World Cup players for so long, and obviously then kind of coming back and seemingly breaking George Martin as well. Thanks, England. These things all kind of do stack up. And like you said, I think if we kind of can finish the season on a high, I think we can feel pretty confident going into next season. Anyway, shall we do some three-word reviews?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go first this time, Elliot, and I'm going to go from Facebook. And I'm going to go with this one from Claire Hopkins Weatherhead, who says 40 with 14, which I think is a very, very good point. I think technically it was probably 34 with 14, but I think it's still worth pointing out that it's the discipline that has cost us massively in this game. And to follow up from that, I like this one as well from Thomas Brown, who says kamikaze kata costly, which I think is a wonderful use of alliteration and also pretty much sums it up. Like you say, bang in the game at that point. I thought probably Northampton were on top, but we'd shown that we could strike when we got within range, and you know, that put the game to bed, sadly.
Yeah, massively. And linked into that is Justin Pegg, who put indiscipline, self-destruct. And that's pretty much as we've been saying, is we're pretty good at shooting ourselves in the foot and, you know, get ourselves into a good position. We then shoot ourselves in the foot.
And then we have errors.
Yeah. And it just, one error becomes two, becomes three, becomes four. And suddenly a position of relative calm becomes one of just chaos and everything's all over the shop. So yeah, it's not good. Finish off with a positive, and we always like to finish with a positive. And Chris Cowley gave us one, and he just put great line out move. And as we said, it's a great try, actually, and just in terms of it's almost simplicity in how brutal it is, in terms of you catch it and you then throw it to the big lad who powers over from 5 yards. I mean, I ain't tackling from Jasper when he's got a head of steam and he comes at you on the try line and Jasper's coming running at you from 5 meters out. No one's going to tackle him. No one wants to tackle him.
Well, when I watched that again, actually, and they said, oh, you know, Chesson did really well to get up because he was late. I mean, he'd argue he was just in time, because actually, if he got there any earlier, then the Northampton pack would have reacted and got round the back. But actually, it's his late movement that creates that space, because you've got all the pack watching the front, thinking that's where the ball's going, expecting another driving ball. So the fact it goes to the back end, Chesson moves so late, is actually key to it. Yeah, look at that. Right, well, we had a mystery guest, as it was when we announced it, because we didn't know who we were going to speak to. But we're delighted to find out it's podcast friend, Joe Hayes, because I think it must be about the fourth time he's been on now, Joe. Thanks. I think you're the only one who signed up to the person who's willing to speak to us. How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on again. love chatting rugby with you guys. So, yeah, happy to be here.
Is there like sort of like an extra downside of being injured, that basically you get put on the rolling wall sort of like hit list? Because I think we spoke to Charlie Clare twice in 3 weeks when he was injured as well.
No, I spoke to you lads when I wasn't injured. So I don't know. I've been doing more community stuff, actually, which has been good, because obviously you've got more spare time now. So I've been back down to a couple of rugby clubs and stuff like that. So I've actually really... saw the other side of things instead of just kind of playing. I've been able to get out a bit more, which has been good.
Giving back, mate. Just giving back. It's just who you are.
Something like that.
I'm going to start by asking the supermarket question, which is the question anyone who sort of like bumps into you in a supermarket will be asked, which you've probably answered 1,000 times already, but we'll ask anyway. How's the injury? I believe it was a calf strain or something to that degree. And how's the recovery coming along?
Yeah, it was good. Well, it wasn't good getting an injury, but a little calf tear. No, rehab's been going all right. It was my first real kind of, well, it was my first ever muscle injury, because usually you've got to be like fast twitch to get muscle injuries. And I don't think I'm usually very fast twitch. So yeah, no, I've been doing loads of rehab, keeping myself sort of distracted, obviously, doing a load more gym now as well, which has been good fun. There's a good rehab group as well. We had me and Georgie Martin have been playing who can play the loudest sort of screaming death metal in the gym when we're on the watt bikes. And
nice.
It's been good, mate. It's been good. We've delved deep into like Motorhead and beautiful. Loads of stuff. But it's been good, yeah.
I've now got an image of you in gorgeous George in a heavy metal band.
I don't think George could control himself. I reckon I'd be all right, but I just think he'd be like, you know, one of those kids and they see a piano and they just want to bang at it. I think it might be a bit like that.
He's like the guy at the Who just would come on like smash guitars and stuff like that.
Yeah, come on, smash a guitar, scream at people and then probably walk off and then do it every 20 minutes.
Yeah, be an expensive production to maintain, I think.
Yeah, but, you know, it'd be worth it. It's worth it. I've seen what I've seen.
Do you have an ETA like on coming back, or is that still kind of like play it week by week and see how it goes?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of week by week, really. So, like today, I did loads of running, which was good. Did a bit of return to scrums and stuff. So, I'll just try and make it as quick as I can, really, to get back, because I'm slowly losing my mind not playing rugby. Hopefully soon.
I do have a wonderful image of you and George Martin in a mosh pit now, just. Just imagine going to like a heavy metal gig and you turn around, fancying your chances, and you turn around and there's you two boys just going crazy in there. I think that would get any even the hardened metal.
I'd be out of there like a shot if I turned around, you know, like the circle pit. I'd be straight out of it.
Me and Ollie Cracknell and his mate, we went to Cambridge last Monday and there was a sort of a festival. It was a fella called Derry Farrell and he's an Irish folk singer. And we go in there and Crackers has organized it. Never heard of this bloke in my life. He's like, we need to get there early. We'll get some good seats. I hope it's all seated, standing. I can't stand up for this long, blah, blah, blah. We get there. There's no queue outside. We're like, right, we're in the right place. We get inside. Okay, everyone seems to be really old here. We get in. There's the average age is about 65 plus. And I was looking around. I was like, I don't think half these people are going to make it through the show. And it was like, this fella was unbelievable. Derry Farrell was incredible. But like, he was thinking it was going to be some sort of like stand-up-ish thing. Like that was the last sort of festival I'd went to. But it was I prefer something like that. The guy was incredible. But like, it was just, the average age was about 40, 50 years older than me or us. It was a good experience. It was very strange.
You sit down and have a cup of tea rather than sort of go windmilling in. That sounds quite pleasant. Speaking of gym heavy metal, I've discovered a new genre of music called synth metal, which is perfect gym stuff. It's basically like somebody like metal style music, but almost using like 80s style synth. And it's, I can't describe it. Look it up, but it's basically that I'll send it to you. So it's the perfect like gym stuff. Basically, if you listen to that, you can look like me.
Us. Okay.
Joe's face tells 1,000 words there. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Obviously, last Saturday was a hugely disappointing loss, and there's no sort of getting away from that. Obviously, you boys have been back in this week. What has been said about it? What's the sort of feeling about how the game went, and sort of what's your perspective on what happened in the game for how it panned out?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, it gets you when you lose against, it gets you when you lose, but especially when it's against Saints. And obviously watching, it was difficult one to kind of get into me a little bit. I don't like Saints and blah, blah, blah. So we came in on Monday and basically just said, like, you know, those first 30-40 minutes, we did everything we planned to do really well. And Saints may have changed something at half time or whatever, but then we just sort of stopped doing it as well as we could have done it, which then gives them little outs into the game, little ins into the game. And then that kind of, then with the way Saints play, it's so loose and, you know, they can make anything out of anything. So then you kind of let them in and you get a score and then they start sniffing, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it was about kind of like making sure that we don't let these teams to recover from the way Tigers play, because those first 30-40 minutes were really good. But I guess we just stopped. And like I said, it's hard for me not playing to then make those, to then say these things, blah, blah, blah. But it was, yeah, it was just one of those things where you've got to keep the pressure on, you've got to keep doing these things. And if you let teams like that in, then, you know, a team as good as Saints at the moment is going to take them.
Sort of coincides, I guess, though, with playing with 14 men like we did for half the game. And when we're committing that many players to disrupting their ruck, and which was really effective, like you say, like first 30-40 minutes, it's either going to leave you short or you're going to have to sacrifice slowing the ball down. Neither way is kind of just going to play straight into sort of Saints' hands, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like the new thing at the moment, I mean, off topic in rugby is all about the counter ruck. And you look at it, I mean, watch any game this weekend, I think nearly 90% of teams now are hitting and then they're counter rucking and then getting up off the floor and then trying to get the ball back through just making a complete mess of the breakdown. So all the teams are doing it. So a lot of the international teams do it. South Africa did it really well in the World Cup. You know, but I think, you know, there's a time and place for it as well. So, you know, if you throw in four or five players into it, then obviously you're going to be short somewhere else. And that's kind of just the awareness, isn't it? It's just about being smart.
Got another big game coming up this weekend. Annoyingly, Bristol, which is another team I don't like. Not because I've got anything against Bristol.
I think you like many teams.
I live literally about sort of 20 minutes from Bristol as well. It's just Pat Lamb, to be honest. So it's Papa Lamb's men coming in to go and come to Welford Road. They're obviously annoyingly have hit a real hot streak. And I don't know how much we read into how much they battered Newcastle by at the weekend. But what's your approach to this game and what sort of messages are you focusing leading into that? Because I suppose they attack in a not entirely dissimilar way to Northampton.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much going into a very similar sort of game plan, kind of going at it and making sure that we do it for 80 minutes as well, you know, because like I said, that first half, it worked out really, really well. So making sure that we're consistent with that. And then obviously, you know, Genji's coming back to Welford Road and they've got, you know, a lot of hype around that as well. So, you know, certainly around the forwards, it's that sort of focus. You know, so yeah, no, I think the lads, you know, there's a physical day today and I was running on the sidelines watching them absolutely smash each other. So, you know, they look in a good spot and, you know, look, obviously it's at Welford Road, it's a sold out as well. So I think the lads are just fully prepared to go and play in front of 24,500 Tigers fans and they're just buzzing about it. Is it 24 or 25?
Isn't it like I thought it was actually like if you get it fully packed, it's 26. I might be making that up. By the way,
539, I think.
Very. Look, look how proud he is. Look how
someone Google it. I'm going to Google it right now. Hold on.
All I know is that Joe's been spending his last 4 weeks being injured, counting all the seats in the stadium.
I was so close. All right, it is 25,849. So I was what, 400 off?
I said 26,000, so
you do round up, yeah. And Elliot didn't say anything, so whatever.
you can't be wrong. Can't be wrong if you don't put a guess in. So 100% success rate. Looking on your favourite subjects, Joe, scrums. Obviously, there's been a couple of changes of scrum coaches over the last few months, like Petrus Duplessis. When we last spoke to you, was temporarily looking after it. Obviously, post World Cup, Dan Palmer's come in and managing it from now on. What's his approach compared to Tom Harrison and Petrus, and what sort of differences is he sort of imparting? What is sort of his? What's he looking for, really, what's he looking for from a scrum, and how's that compared to previous coaches?
Well, I mean, Petrus, at the beginning of the season, we had such a focus on are snap. So a bit like the ball comes in and then we all go as an eight. And like, we sort of, we focused on that quite a lot. I mean, Petrus, I've never met a bloke more energetic and full of beans. He was absolutely crazy. I think he was a great coach. He's a great coach. He, but the snap, with that kind of focus, we kind of conceded on the engage. And then we were like, no, don't worry, we'll get them on the snap kind of thing. That was the beginning of the season. And it went well, but it wasn't the, it wasn't a positive way to scrum. It was almost like, we'll recover, you know? So I think Palms has come in now. We'll go, no, we're on the front foot from the get-go. You know, every phase of the setup to bind, to engage, to squeeze, to snap, all those kind of things. That's, you're being aggressive. That's the, you're being the aggressor throughout those kind of moments. You're not like giving up on the bind and trying to put loads back up on the engage, all those kind of things. So just about being solid all eight sort of pack that is aggressive as opposed to, sort of conceding and then trying to go, oh yeah, we'll get him on the snap kind of thing, which it did work, but it wasn't a positive way of doing it.
I'm going to ask probably the shit question now, which doesn't really change my standard line of questioning. So Tiger signings for next season, we've got a certain Nicky Smith coming along, and yeah, obviously you've been a phenomenal scrummager, but I think it would be fair to say that perhaps one of the not so great days in the office for you was against Nicky Smith. And I always say that every prop has someone who kind of like that. I always remember with Coley, with I think it was Domingo for France, he just couldn't figure him out. He could beat anyone else, but it was the same. Well, are you kind of looking forward to sort of like him join, so like in those scrum training sessions you can try sort of like expand, like I suppose, how you scrummage and how you deal with certain opponents?
Yeah, I mean, I've scrummed against loads of different types of props, I suppose, and you know, just one of those days where I just genuinely just couldn't work it out. And people aren't scared to talk about it every other day. But, you know, it was a difficult one to kind of, as a young player at the time, I was still trying to get over and trying to understand why that happened, all those kind of things. But yeah, no, like he's coming. Apparently he's a great bloke. So I've heard from like Ollie Cracknell and stuff. So, you know, I'll be excited to get him in and hopefully learn a bit off him as well. Find out what he was doing on that dreadful day.
But, just get your own back in a couple of like friendly scrummaging sessions.
Tell me your secrets. Hopefully it'd be good. Thanks for reminding me about that. That was great.
I knew you were going to say that.
Nah, it's all good.
Obviously, Joe, for you, this season has been an interesting one, obviously, with the new contract just before Christmas being announced and you staying with us, which is great news. In terms of, first of all, you must be buzzing with it, getting that all signed and secured. And secondly, what did you treat yourself with post new contract?
Well, I mean, I bought a house after it, but don't like link the two together. Like it was I got a massive sign-on fee and I bought a house. It wasn't like that. So I suppose that was a good kind of exciting thing to get, because you know, you commit your future to Leicester and it's like, right, well, I'll buy a house in Leicester. So, you know, I moved out into Leicestershire now, and you know, that's to me, I'm really excited to get stuck into the country life and play rugby for Leicester Tigers. And you know, like it was just it was an easy decision. It was, you know, it was just such an easy decision.
This is your descent into becoming Julian White. You know, like you it starts with a move to the countryside, then it starts with a bit of land, and then before you know it, you're elbow deep in a cow.
So my neighbours, I met my neighbours a couple of months ago, and they just bought a field randomly and started rearing sheep. I was just like, that's cool, but like, you know,
everyone needs a hobby.
Everyone needs a hobby. Yeah, I just sheep. I don't know, but maybe something. Maybe some of the livestock. I'll focus on the rugby for now, then I'll get into livestock, I reckon. Probably not. I don't
know. So from a personal point of view, you've been one of the real consistents and I think a real positive story of this season. Scrummaging has been great. I've really liked, I think your carrying has been wicked, particularly for England A. And I know that it wasn't, you know, kind of like the strongest opposition, but there was one where I thought you were going to run through their entire pack at one point. And you actually were robbed of a try as well, I think, if I remember rightly, where you scrummed through their scrum to the point you popped out the other side and the ref had already given a penalty try by the time you popped, dived on the ball. How do you feel your season's gone and what are you sort of taking from it?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the beginning, I was in the World Cup camp and stuff like that. And, you know, I wasn't particularly surprised that I was released or anything like that, and managed to get back in and get a good full preseason with Tigers, which I hadn't done in so long. And, you know, because I've been away with the 20 summer tour, then I did a bit of summer tour. So it was good to get, you know, a whole new group together, new coaching staff. So that set me up, I feel, really well. Really, really kind of enjoyed my rugby and obviously the Six Nations. And I didn't play for a kind of prolonged period of time and stuff like that. But, you know, I feel like what, especially sort of earlier on in the season with, like, you know, Dan McKellar and all the coaches that he brought in, it was certain, like, you know, you can add these things to your game. So more of the skill and the carrying work. And that's something I really kind of bought into. You know, I just thought, oh, look, I'll just go around and I'll tackle people and I'll, you know, I'll just pop myself over a breakdown. But now, like, I actually want to touch the ball and, you know, I want to get involved. So look, you know, it's been a good season, I feel. You know, not a lot. I haven't hit a lot of targets that I set, but, you know, like, obviously I want to get back as quick as I can and finish on a high and yeah.
Are you, have you got any sort of goals, I suppose, for us next season, or is that more something that you do at the end of, like, this season when you kind of, you're on a beach somewhere?
Well, no, I haven't really, like, set a lot yet. I think it'd be more around, like, see how preseason goes, see what's coming at it. And then, you know, like, I'm 25 now and, you know, I think perhaps probably trying to take on a bit more of a sort of leadership role or something like that would be good. But, you know, I'm still haven't decided yet, but I imagine it'd be the same, playing a load of rugby and hitting things. So it's all very similar. You know,
mate, it's been fantastic having you on again. It's always a pleasure. And it's good to see you looking so well in your brand spanking new house.
Oh, I'm still at my old house at the moment, but I'll be there on Friday, hopefully.
Well, okay, bro. Well, yeah, upgrade. Excellent. Well, well done,
that's
mate.
That's the invite, bro.
Housewarming party at Joe's. Cheers, mate.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you.
Okay, time to look ahead. Home fixture against Bristol this weekend. A game that perhaps last season we'd be looking forward to, and rightly so, because I seem to remember that we hammered them. But they're looking pretty shit hot at the moment, mate, aren't they?
Really annoying for so many reasons. Because one, always like it when Bristol are crap, because I can just laugh at Pat Lamb. And secondly, it's really annoying because they're going to rock up in unbelievable form and... Well, quite frankly, we're not in unbelievable form. So, and you know, it's pretty, the mood music around us at the moment is pretty, pretty miserable at the moment. And you could do a sort of a nice win just to sort of get back on track. And to be fair, we're in a league where there's no gimmies anymore. So you don't get, well, there is a gimme. Bristol had one at the weekend. But yeah, it's another tough game against the. Believably only kicked it 3 times in 80 minutes against Falcons and just ran the shit off it from everywhere. So, yeah, it's a real good test of our defensive structures again. So, comes back to 15, please, lads. 80 minutes, 15. No yellow cards, no reds. Let's give ourselves the best chance of winning, because this could be a painful afternoon if we don't get it right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things, though. I mean, like you say, the caveat is it was Newcastle at home, and having watched the game, I think in the first minute they start flinging it around and actually the ball bubbles around a bit, and there's no real pressure from Newcastle. They don't really get in to slow the ball down particularly. They don't put any pressure on the breakdown. Bristol basically have free rein to go from touchline to touchline. Now, obviously, we've got a slightly smaller pitch. I think hopefully we'll have an advantage in the set piece. That's what we'd like to have. Obviously, Genji was looking in good form as well. He's come back into it, I think, second half of this season. Six Nations, thought he was excellent as well. Always good to see Genji back, but always hope he has a stinker against us. But look, they're flying at the moment. And, you know, I think rather than say kind of it's annoying, it'll be wicked to take the wind out of their sails. Because I always think back to the game which I thought was a bit of a turning point for Tigers under Steve, was the game where we lost in, you know, that don't worry, Pat, you know, that particular game where Bristol were coming in They were in red hot form. Obviously, we know how it ended for them in that semi final against Harlequins. But we played some good rugby, but we dragged them down. We shut their attack down for large parts of that game. They still have moments, and they will certainly at the weekend as well. But actually, what we're able to do is we're able to be really physical and really disrupt them. And if we're actually the way that we play the first half against Newcastle in defence is actually probably a pretty good blueprint to bring into this one, just sort the discipline out, because again, slow their ball down, mess up their ruck, counter ruck, and in certain phases know when to press. When the ball's bobbling about behind and they're panicking, that's when we fly up and create mayhem. Otherwise, if they want to kind of run all their patterns and pick their, you know, they can do that behind the game line. And I think that we got that exactly right. That's what we need to be doing against Bristol this weekend.
I find it really interesting how, in terms of Kata, is obviously probably going to be suspended, almost definitely going to be suspended. Be interested to see what we do in the centres. Do you bring Scotty back in just for that extra defensive, like Nouse? Or was Scotty on the injured list?
I don't know. I mean, the obvious choice will obviously be just to reunite Kelly and Scotty. We don't know if Guy Porter's fit. Obviously, he would be another option. And he'll want to kind of certainly make one more appearance, because he seems to have just sort of faded out this season, hasn't he, you know, with his injuries. And be great to see him back at Welford Road and get a chance to go out with a bang and try and prove a point and everything. So I think that the centres is really interesting. I don't know if Tommy will be fit or not. I suppose it depends if he passes his HIA tests after the game or not. That's going to be interesting as well. If Hammer is fit, is Gorgeous George fit, because I want him to play? And again, the selection at fullback, you know, Shilly didn't have his best game, but he looked really good there against Leinster, gave us something extra. And I'd be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised though if McKellen said, you know what, I'm going to go back to my tried and trusted and put Freddie back at fullback. But I suppose the issue is Bristol don't kick a lot. So, effectively, is Freddie kind of going to be wasted really in that department?
You also got to see who's fit, because at the moment, you know, Stewart's almost, not just because it looks good in attack and we played better with Shawcock in attack for most of it with only about 15. There isn't any white ringers. If we're running out of wingers, full stop. You know, Bassett's injured, Watson's injured, Simmons is injured. Freddie's playing there almost out of necessity, just as much as tactical reasons. So it might well be, if Bassett isn't fit, that Freddie's got to keep going on the right hand side. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all pans out in selection of how we go about it. It was quite interesting, to be fair. I mean, Austin picked up on it on Saturday that whilst Shilly was at 15, that Freddie was at 15 quite a lot defensively, which is what you've said quite a few times, is actually...
I have said that quite a lot of times, thank you. And it's not pleasing to note that the coaches picked up on it. It wasn't why we lost. Have to get that in there.
No, it wasn't. It's actually a strike. It was a good thing. It was a good thing, which you've highlighted, that actually you can move... You can be versatile. Doesn't matter what number you've got on your back, you can be versatile with how you position yourself. So it'll be interesting to see what they do across the board, because it's the injuries that's going to dictate, I think, who plays really.
Yeah, it always makes these sort of team selections slightly difficult. I mean, I'm happy to just get stuck straight into the team. I wouldn't change too much. Obviously, hopefully there's nothing wrong with the Emperor and it was just precaution that we took him off. But I would go for the same front row. Hopefully Hazy might be just about getting fit as well, because I think that having him on the bench against the Bristol pack, where I don't think they have a lot of depth in the front row, I think would be a real boon.
Yeah, I'd definitely be up for that. I'd try and keep as much as possible the same. Front row, I'd keep the same if possible. Second row really comes down to whether George is fit. You know, if George is fit, I'd like to have him and Chesham in the second row, if possible. And it comes down to the back row. It'd be really interesting, obviously, that how they go about it. Do you go Cracknell at seven for the extra ball? Because if Hanro is fit, does he come back in? Probably. Shame on Finn, but you know, Hanro's fit, he's sort of going to come back in.
I don't think it's any slight on Finn to say, look, you had a great game and you'll probably be on the bench. But at the same time, this is Hanro Liebenberg, captain South Africa, who we're talking about here. Certainly, I don't think you should take it personally if Hanro comes straight back in. Seven is a really interesting one, because obviously Tommy plays if he's fit. But if, and then there'll be calls for Leone to start for the extra jackling and slowing the ball down. But, you know, everyone chipped in against Leinster. There was some really, really good stuff. And I think that Crackers can do that job, not quite as well. No one could do it as well as Tommy. And I think that would be an interesting one. I'd probably go for Crackers if Tommy's not fit.
I'd probably go Crackers. One, because he's not a bad Jacqueline. At 7.5, as we sort of described him, he adds a bit of bulk in the carrying game. And if you are trying just to get the sort of nudge on up front, I think having a bit of extra bulk for Crackers gives you just about swings it. But I could see the argument for Ilione if in terms of just to get in there and be the real genuine Jackal threat.
Yeah, exactly. I certainly wouldn't be upset if Ilione starts. JVP was someone who we didn't mention, actually, who I thought had a good game. Whilst he was on, again, he looks lively, he looks strong, he looks quick. So JVP and Pollard starts. I want to see more from Pollard, but I think the message this to you is saying that for me, he's very much like Farrell. I think he is an excellent attacking and all-round 10 if you have a correct system to play him into, if you have a really good, clear attacking structure. And obviously, for various reasons this season, we haven't had that. And that's where the difference is between him and someone like George Ford, when, you know, we all heard basically George Ford was running the attack and the season we won the league. Pollard isn't, or doesn't appear to be, that kind of player. He's also a player coach. And it doesn't mean he has any less value, but it just means that I think he needs the extra support. So for me, I would probably go for Pollard, Kelly, then Porter or Scott outside centre. And I would be looking at probably odd stick with Shilcock, Freddie Stewart and Hassel Collins as the back three. Like you say, probably out of necessity, really.
Yeah, don't disagree with any of that.
So where do you think game's going to be won and lost? Where do you think we can get at Bristol? What's your prediction?
Keep 15 on the field for starters. I think that'd be...
That's the objective.
To be honest, you look at what we sort of spoke about last week and what we saw on Saturday for the first hour from us against Saints. I think you've got to take as much of that into possible. Saints are a lot more structured these days compared to what they are before. They are a bit more structured than Bristol. But the same rules apply in terms of if you let Bristol play the game on their terms, they want to get the ball wide, they're going to run it around, they're going to stretch you in defence and they're going to attack the space. I think you've got to do exactly what we spoke about last week in terms of disrupt the breakdown, slow the ball down, get the game played on our terms, have a bit of structure, play the game in our areas of the field, be resolute in defence. Now, all of these sort of key bullet points we're talking about is it's just another game against pretty similar opponents who have a pretty similar mindset. And you've just got to go into that and really get the game dictated to on our terms. I think the fact it's coming up close to a sellout, I think that's massive in terms of, yeah. I think it's an extra percentage point, which could be our favour. And I know, as I say, everyone's a bit miserable and down the dumps, but you know, yes, the season probably is done on already, but on Saturday, I think we've got to really make the atmosphere our point of difference. Because if we can, you've got to get behind the boys. Just put for the 80 minutes, just park the negativity, to park feelings about the club and the team and where things are. Just get behind the boys for 80 minutes. Just make it a real supportive atmosphere, because if you can feed, the boys will feed off that energy. And if it's a real positive energy, they can buy off that. And you just got to get behind them, because if it's negative and you get the groans, it's a bit like, ugh. In other ways, they'll feed off that and that can drag them down. So you've got to give the boys an extra shunt in the way. You've got to be the 16th man just to give them an extra helping hand, because they can get that. If you can get it going, put Bristol under pressure and the crowd is up for it and they get noisy and they get in amongst it, then, you know, Bristol have had a ropey season. I know they've had a decent few weeks, but you know, they've got to be respected off the back of it. But before the shutdown, they were pretty nowhere. And Pat Lamb was under real pressure. I mean, there's quite a lot of Bristol fans queuing up saying he should be sat. All of them were pretty much on the view that his time was done and he's got to go. And yet they're on the cusp of the top four. So it shows that they can be got at.
Yeah, and I think there's more pressure on them than there is on us for this. Now they've got that expectation. We kind of know that, you know, if we're going to have any hope, we need 5 points. But that almost kind of frees you up a little bit to kind of go and say, right, well, do you know what? We're just going to fucking, you know, have a proper go at these guys. Because if we get 5 points, great. It might still not be enough, you know, in the scheme of things. It might put us back in the hunt. We don't know. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of out of our hands really now. But what we can do is effectively try and put them under pressure, which they weren't put under any pressure against Newcastle, and see how they cope with that. Because I think they're a confidence side. They've always been a confidence side, and we know that they can have a mental fragility. So I think if we can sort of get up them a little bit, scare them, then I think that, you know, there's good opportunities there. Again, in defence, I liked what we did against Northampton. Take your point about, you know, Bristol are more unstructured than Northampton, but they still effectively go touchline to touchline and, you know, try and, you know, suck you in with patterns, et cetera, et cetera. And those only really work when you're kind of pressing up and you've got kind of like midfield defenders biting in and then they can get round you. But if you effectively let them run all that, if they want to, basically whenever they make the pass, that's when you step up. You use the time the ball's in the air to step up, get across, et cetera, drift. Then I think that you can make it very, very hard for them to find the outside space. Everywhere they go, they can go touchline to touchline on our smaller pitch and not get anywhere. And that's what we need to do. We need to be really fired up, really up there. And if you're thinking about going, but you haven't, there's only a few tickets left, go and grab one, because I think that this is the kind of thing that as Tigers fans we should thrive on. We stuck with the club when things were crap, you know, pre-Steve Borthwick, and people showed up, and that should be the same now as well. This is where the boys need us. This is where you need to show you're a fan. This is where you need to get behind them, and I think everyone will. What's your prediction?
Tigers just think Tigers by 5, and we'll have to grind it out, and we'll have to tough it out, and I think they will scare us, but I think we'll get it over the line.
I'm going to go balls out. I'm going to say Tigers by 12. I think
we'll, wow, I like it.
I think we'll be angry. We'll be angry. That's what I'm aiming for. Okay, here endeth the Rolling Wall podcast and the end of the East Midlands derbies. Thank fuck for that this season. Oh no, we won the first one, didn't we? So okay, 1-1 in the draws. But obviously not particularly happy one. We don't have to talk about it ever again, and nor shall we. Anyway, we look forward to hopefully delivering more positive podcasts next week after we play Bristol. Stay safe, everyone.